Actor and comedian Russell Brand's been in the media a lot lately. He's got a new book out called Revolution, about why he thinks our political systems and cultural myths aren't working. But one high-profile foray into public politics last year did not go so well for him. After Brand guest-edited the British political magazine The New Statesman, the BBC's Jeremy Paxman grilled him on his political philosophy. Here's a snippet.
Russell Brand, who are you to edit a political magazine?
Well, I just suppose like a person who's being politely asked by an attractive woman. I don't know what the typical criteria is. I don't know many people that edit political magazines. Boris, he used to do one, didn't he? So I'm a person with crazy hair, quite a good sense of humour. Don't know much about politics, I'm ideal.
But is it true you don't even vote?
Yeah, no, I don't vote.
Charles Monroe Kane sat down to talk with Russell Brand recently and began by asking him about that interview.
You have more than 11 million hits to that video. Why did you touch a chord on that? I mean, you really, really got people fired up over that video.
Well, the reason I think, Charles, is because it's what people are feeling anyway. If you say something and people don't feel it, even if whether you're saying drink Coke or overthrow the government, if people don't feel that there's a gap in there, a Coke-shaped gap in their life, your product ain't going to fly. It's not new to say, oh, look, the government's clearly just representing big business. It doesn't matter who you vote for. You're going to get the same kind of system afterwards. We all get excited every 4 years when there's an election because it's theatrical, it's exciting. Oh, there's this guy, he's saying this, and this person's saying that. You know, you've just been through the sort of the disappointment of your last democratic government. We all saw what it led to. Nothing. More wars, more economic disparity, further dissolution of institutions for the benefit of corporate elites. And like, so when you go on the if you go on the TV and say, well, why participate in that? Let's see, it's not saying don't vote, go and sit in your garden shed and stare at your feet. I'm saying don't vote. If you want change, create that change. Organise your communities. Organise your workplace. You deserve to be represented. We deserve something better than democracy. What we deserve is democracy. We don't have democracy. Democracy is you vote for something and stuff changes. Hey, we want this. Okay, well, that's cool. But there's a famous quote, if voting made any difference, they'd abolish it. And I think in our time, that's sort of increasingly prevalent.
You know, I think for a lot of people, when the Bonos of the world, which is I'm putting you in that thing, if you don't mind, when the Bonos of the world tell us what to do, there's kind of a recoil. I'm not saying it's fair, but there is one. You know, it seems like in some ways there must be time to retire that single enlightened leader, instead empower the kind of enlightened community, the mass of people that can be enlightened. Because wasn't it cult of personality that partly got us to this problem in the first place?
Yes, I don't think there's any point in exchanging for another cult of personality. I agree with you entirely. I think if I was in a position of any power, I'd be as corrupt and as useless as anybody else. Because if you have a system that's predicated on selfishness and greed, whoever you plug into that position will vibrate on the frequency of selfishness and greed. What we need, as Chomsky would tell you, is deconcentration of power. Any system that concentrates power in the hands of one communist dictator or a small group of economic oligarchs is not good for ordinary people. Deconcentrate power. Deconcentrate. Have people in charge of their own communities. Have people in charge of their own workplaces. Have people in charge of their own lives. Why in the land of the free would you accept anything less than freedom?
It's interesting, you write something that really, just for a personal background, I grew up very poor. My dad was a steel mill worker, lost his job. And you wrote something that really struck me. You said that anyone who has ever been poor and gets rich is stalked for the rest of their life by guilt and fear. What do you mean by that?
The guilt is that you think, I don't deserve this. And the fear is that you're going to have to be poor again. And it doesn't go away. And the reason it doesn't go away is because you sort of know that the narrative you've been given, that, oh, if I get out, I'll be all right, isn't a real narrative.
Is that where you write about Joseph Campbell? You talk about his critique of society that lacks a communal myth. We have no story that unites us. And if you don't have a story that unites you, you're going to be divided by the story they provide you. What does it mean that you have to have a narrative change to change the world?
So we take on board narratives like consumerism or nationalism. If you don't like, what am I? I am English. I am born in England. I support West Ham United. I like the Smiths. I am vegetarian. I am anti-establishment. I am anti-authority. I created a story for myself. I created a myth for myself. Now, the problem is we've all been provided with these individualistic, materialistic myths. And the myths that we had that were communal, the monotheistic faiths that were the mainstay of our culture for a long time, are either falling apart or fleeing into terrifying extremism. We need to promote the story that all of us have the right to live on this planet in harmony with one another while respecting the planet. And the people that don't want you to hear that story are the people that benefit from things staying the way they are. Like, they've sort of hit you up with utopia. We're not going to immediately happen upon utopia. There will be problems, there'll be hierarchies, there'll be inequalities, but we're not competing with perfection. We're competing with economic meltdown and galling inequality.
You know, it's interesting. I hear you talk and you remind me of me when I worked for Greenpeace and when my friends were radicals and young, and we were speaking truth to power and we were into it, man, and we'd learned all this stuff and it was blowing our minds. But now, you know, well, you know, we're in our 40s. What happened?
I suppose we get kind of cordoned off by our individual needs, by a sort of a culture that rewards you for individualism and materialism, and you sort of give up and you get despondent. And I'm not yet 40, let me tell you, Charles.
Oh, sorry.
But it's more important. No. Just let me cling on to the final few months of my 30s. And But it's more important, I guess. I mean, we all participate, but, you know, it's people that are teenage and in their 20s now that are going to, you know, they're going to have to do the work of this. They're going to have to. But, mate, they're ready.
Yeah.
They're ready and they're up for it. You see, they're full of it. And we have to be, all we have to do is provide pathways and information and support for them. And each of us do what we can. And it's not like it's not over.
You know, you're the court jester right now, so to speak. Everyone's looking at you. What do you want people to know? What's your narrative?
My narrative is that I'm just going to be making jokes and talking about the stuff that I think is important and being disruptive. And being disruptive, encouraging people to take control of their own lives, encouraging people to disobey authority if they don't agree with it, encouraging people, if they feel that they're being shortchanged, ripped off or conned, to organise and collectivise. If you think you're not being treated fairly at work, ask the other people that work where you work if they feel they're being treated fairly. And don't accept for one second that there's nothing you can do. That ain't true. The people that want things to stay there the way they are need you to believe that there's nothing you can do. My narrative is we can create whatever reality we want to. That human beings are magnificent creatures, and yet we've turned our democracy, the institutions of our governance, into these blunt, pointless little tools where we get to shuffle around in a puppet show once every 4 years, where we can pull down realms. We are glorious, divine creatures.
You know, does it ever bother you, to ask a personal question, your path, though transformative, is kind of cliche, right? You know, poor kid, turned drug addict, movie star, find yoga and Buddha, and now preaches personal change. It's like I've seen that movie.
I think that the cliche is a retrospectively applied narrative device, but what it could be regarded as an archetype, you know, because the journey that we all have, the hero's journey, the journey of every individual's life, is the journey of awakening, of understanding, you know, the journey of like Christ, for example, born poor, hangs out a lot, goes a little crazy, falls in with a bad crowd, gets crucified. You know, all these stories, all these myths, all these ideas are pertinent because that's the shape of life.
You know, the narrative arc for the hero, though in long term helps, you know, kind of make the world a better place, it doesn't end very well for the hero normally, I might add. For the Messiah, doesn't do very well at the end of his own story. Are you ready for that? Are you capable of what you seem to be asking yourself to be doing?
Well, I don't know. I just got to take it moment by moment and know that. But really, I'm just responding to reality as it happens, you know. And I try to remind myself that we all die anyway. It's not like there's one option where you don't die, you know. Well, if you shut up, you can not die. You can live on forever in a sort of a feather-stuffed, glistening prison of luxury. It's like, you know, you die anyway. It's like, sort of, you know, what do you want to do? Die for something or die for nothing?
You know, if you don't mind me asking as a personal question, why are you doing this? I mean, you're a movie star.
Well, you know, I come from an ordinary background. I was told, work hard, get famous, get glamorous, get laid, get high. I did it. It doesn't work. It doesn't mean anything. And I went back to the place I'm from, and it's got worse for the people that are from there. And it's getting worse for people in your country. It's getting worse for people in my country. And it's going to continue to get worse unless not some glamorous, shimmering individual or some bespectacled intellectual does something, but if we all do something, and that is a possibility.
Russell Brand's latest book is called Revolution. You can find a whole host of other interviews, revolutionary, heroic, and otherwise, on our website at ttbook.org.